Good? There we go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to our build talk. I have to actually look at it. It's Tales from the Trenches, Developing Harvesting Gunpowder with Unity. I was asked to put this talk together because they wanted to give you guys a perspective of what it's like to kind of be a customer of both Windows and of Unity. And our goal is really to help share our experience with you in order to make it better. One thing that I actually wanted to ask really quickly, because I've done this talk now a few times and Rich done it as well, is get a sense of how many people actually know what Unity is and how many people have used Unity. So if you've used or know what it is, raise your hand. Good.
Oh.
That's awesome. Because I gave a talk 2 days ago with it where one person knew what it was and it became very difficult to like do the tech side of things, which is also great because Rich, my co-presenter, is going to be doing the tech stuff, so it gives me a little more of a break.
You bet on 5%.
I know. Well, that's awesome. Anyway, as you know, I can actually start off quickly and saying, you guys heard the great news about Unity, and I think that's really exciting. So you guys are really in a good position being here at Build, and I mean, really, all developers using Unity targeting Windows systems, really got a nice little perk. Anyway, our agenda for today is actually pretty straightforward. I wanted to give you guys a little bit of background on both Rich and I, what our jobs are, how we've gotten to be here. We're going to show you actually a game that we made that's for sale in the store right now. It's actually one of the first Unity games available in the Windows Store. We're going to talk a little bit about why and how we use Unity, but because you guys have experience, we'll actually cut that a little shorter. And then we'll give you guys probably what you're here for, which are the tips and tricks to making your life a lot easier. These come, like I said, from experiences that we had over the last few months in building our first few games using Unity for Windows 8. And then we kind of we'll just close out with thinking about the future. As you've been here this week, you've seen how the platform's evolving, you've seen how hardware's evolving, and you've seen how software's evolving, and give you guys a sense of what we're thinking about from our backgrounds in terms of where we're going from here. So anyway, my name is Ethan Ablis. I'm a senior producer within Microsoft Game Studios. I joined the Connected Experiences team about 15 months ago after working in the console area. I was at Rockstar Games. The team that I'm on focuses on bringing cool and new experiences to Windows platforms. We are a first-party publisher. And we kind of went ahead and we were looking to push those platforms in different directions, both in terms of feature sets and what we're doing in the games, but also push the platforms forward. I made this move from console gaming to this kind of mobile space. It's kind of an ambiguous space, especially in the Windows 8 world, because I wanted to go where gameplay was really evolving more. There are always going to be very large publishers making great AAA console titles, but I kind of saw this evolution of gaming, both in monetization and gameplay design, that I was really interested in being a part of. So I made this move specifically for that. But as part of that, I needed a way to kind of try out these designs really quickly, and I needed to work with developers who could try out these designs really quickly. And so I started looking around for tools and asking what developers were currently using, and the name Unity came up more often than not. That was kind of a product of the fact that the developers we were looking for to help us develop these experiences for Windows 8 were coming from the mobile world. So far, I've released two Unity games on Windows 8. They're both there. It's Gunpowder and Harvest. Gunpowder is actually done with Rogue Rocket Games, which Rich is the co-founder of. Rich comes from a similar background. He's an 11-year game development veteran. I always love being a veteran of gaming. It is a war in some sense. He shipped many platforms. He's been on every platform, every title, and I think, he can actually tell you a little bit more about it in a few minutes. Came to Unity because of the fact that it was really a multi-platform approach to things. And when you're developing games, it's why not take advantage of as many audience members as you can. He likes to. Rogue Rocket as a company really likes to focus on innovative gameplay designs. They like taking things that seem to be popular and finding interesting twists and ways to kind of enhance gameplay past where they are. This is actually what I've always thought is the trickiest part of game design, because you want to do something that's tried and true that game players want to do, but you have to offer them something new. So one of the reasons why Rogue Rocket and I really enjoy Unity is because it really allows you to prototype out these game designs in such a way that you're not wasting time setting up your engine and setting up frameworks. You can get really right into the game design very, very quickly. In addition, Rich has great hair.
I actually just have hair.
That's true. I get to slip jokes in because I had to prepare the PowerPoint presentation and he just has to read along. He has also released two Unity games, the Gunpowder being the one that we worked on together, and also a game Sushi Chop, which originally started on iOS.
iOS originally, yeah.
And has now made it to a number of other platforms. Anyway, so as I was saying before, you know, this talk is a little bit different than a lot of the other build talks you've attended, in the sense because I'm not a Windows engineer. I don't come from the Windows side of Microsoft. I do get to wear the shirt, but it's really, and this is our experiences that we've learned through being a customer of Windows and of Unity. Actually, we're really lucky to have two Unity people here, and they know full well that it's been a great relationship that we've been building over the time, and it's been quite an experience. And really, we wanted to share these with you so that you guys can all get the same enjoyment that we got in the end of working as partners with both Windows and with Unity. Anyway, so you've probably heard these kind of slides and seen these kind of presentations throughout Build, but I wanted to touch on them because, again, as a customer, you know, making the decision to publish on Windows 8 came with some thought, and we had to think about why we wanted to do it besides just being part of Microsoft. Well, a new store equals less competition. I think the last time I checked, which was yesterday, the day before, there are about 12,000 games in the Windows Store, and that's really a lot easier to rise to the top of than, you know, say 100,000 or 150,000 or 500,000. It's an advantage that you should take advantage of. You know, you guys are developers here at the cutting, you know, the beating edge of a store that's growing. It's really important to get in early. It's a developer-friendly environment. You have Visual Studio tools, which, you know, they've keep enhancing as they've shown you. And it's just it's a platform that's easy to develop on. It's always been a platform that's easy to develop on. You have users who are out there who are looking for good content. You know, people buy these new devices. There are new devices coming out every day, every week, every month. And people want to go into the store and find something new. I'm sure they will go and download some games that, you know, they've heard of or, you know, want to see or check out. But they're looking for new content because they're looking for things to try out and really push their hardware. And really, the thing that, you know, a lot of makes it easy for me to sell publishing on Windows 8 to other companies is the fact that the revenue split is so good in the Windows Store. I believe there's been some talk about this weekend, but the details are, you know, in your development accounts. But there are a few hurdles, and again, you know, this shows trying to be honest with you guys about our experiences. A new store means that initially there was a very small user base. In addition, the old store layout provided some, there was some hindrance to just discovery of applications. It wasn't the best organized thing on earth, and, you know, I sat in a bunch of meetings and gave feedback directly to the Windows Store team about, you know, what we kind of wanted or needed really to make this a viable store. And really, as you guys have seen, and, you know, they've stressed a lot throughout this week, they've done a lot of great work on making it, you know, much more accessible. They refer other apps that are based on genres, and it really has become a much more conducive space to selling your app, both as a previous released app or a ported app or, you know, a brand new app, which is really quite exciting. So I wanted to just quickly touch base, and again, I'm kind of going to go quickly through these since you guys all know the advantages of Unity and stuff, but there's some stuff we should touch on, which is, you know, when you're using Unity on Windows 8, you get to use the same tools that, you know, you've used before. It's the same platform, the same editor. You get to sit there and use all the things that you are used to using. That's a great boon. There's no ramp-up time. You know, you just get right into it. The multi-platform approach is great. It's not hindered in any way by, you know, trying to target Windows 8. Same code base runs on everywhere. Additionally, you can actually take projects that you've previously written, bring it into the latest build of Unity, and very quickly port existing code. This became, you know, really useful for a lot of devs. And you guys ported Sushi Chop in, like, what?
Well, you know, once we did most of the underlying stuff for Gunpowder, I kind of took the stuff we wrote that was portable away from it, and we kind of got Sushi Chop up and running on Windows 8 in, like, 2 days, just me doing it.
So, I mean, and Rich is good, but, you know, 2 days, 2 days sounds like a pretty worthwhile investment to, you know, hit a brand new platform. Additionally, if we can get to the next one, I wanted to give you a little background on how Unity works since it is a bit different. Unity on Windows 8 works very similar to how iOS works in that when you compile a project, you get a Visual Studio project file out of there. So when you're building your AppX, you actually do it in Visual Studio. This is very similar to how iOS works. It is actually really awesome for a number of reasons that we'll kind of touch base on in just a few minutes. Unity runs on the .NET framework rather than Mono. Again, this is not really a limitation anyway. There are things you have to think about because of that, but they really don't get in your way significantly in any real way. Unity games can, from the Windows Store can consume and run Windows runtime components, no unmanaged DLLs. Basically, it means that there are, you know, in the asset store of Unity, which is a great resource, which I'm sure since all of you use Unity know about, you have to make sure that the plugins are compatible. But we'll touch base on that in a few minutes as well. Anyway, so you know, I've kind of introduced why we make Windows 8 games and why we use Unity, and you know that there are some things you have to think about. But you know, it's still the Unity tools that you all love to use, and you're good at, and you get to make those same kind of great games and great experiences. So we did want to just take a second to show you guys Gunpowder, which is the game that we made together and released in the Windows Store. Was it back in February, right?
February, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll switch over
here. What was number 6? I forgot.
Yeah. You want to play?
Yeah, I'll play.
Okay. Hopefully this time we won't blow out your eardrums. Sorry about that for the people who were sitting in the room before.
That's all right.
Okay.
So here's Gunpowder. My business partner and I came up with this actually quite a while ago, and we partnered up with Microsoft to do this game. So this is Microsoft published. And it was a really good relationship. Ethan's our producer. It was a lot of fun. And we're really proud of this game, so we hope you like it. And everyone go and use your new spanking Surface Pros and go download it immediately. Help out the cause.
Yeah.
Or not. So I'm just going to load up the first level here. I'm going to skip this little story thing, but it's very simple. It's set up kind of like these other puzzle games like Cut the Rope, Where's My Water, where there's these levels you run through. It's just that we have a totally different mechanic here. And basically, you're like this Robin Hoodie guy, and you're trying to steal money from this mean boss cat guy named Boss Grimshaw and give money back to the poor villagers who've been getting jacked. So, you know, you just use your finger, and you can draw gunpowder and make funny shapes. And there's like little secret things you can do, so you know I'm totally gonna give away.
You're gonna give away
here.
Like one of the most secret achievements in the game, right here.
Well, it's too late. I already did it. So you can see like the gunpowder kind of splits. Oh, I totally almost failed, right?
So you did. Oh,
Whee! And then pretty soon, what you expect is gonna happen is gonna happen. Boom! Explosions.
And there's your achievement.
Grimshaw's all mad, and there's the people getting their money. They're all happy and stuff. So that was obviously the first level, it was very basic. So I'm gonna go into like a slightly later level.
I only played through the first chapter.
I should buy the unlock right
here. You should, right here. Show how to monetize in DTO games.
I don't even know which level this is off the top of my head. I want you to pay attention to this loading screen, I'm gonna talk about that a little later. So now things are getting a little more complicated. There's like a river in the way, you wanna blow up the little safe up there. I just realized the camera doesn't know where I'm pointing necessarily. But now you have these like little barrels you have to drag out. So you can go anywhere, you can see like, oh, if I leave it here, it'll blow this stuff up. But you know, I need to get across the river here maybe. I need to blow up stuff across this river. Doop. And if you screw up a lot, you can kind of erase it. You're like, oh man, I'm terrible at this game. And then you light it up. Explosions are really sad when it's quiet.
I know, explosions have a lot more capable than mine.
Yay, I missed a pig.
So, you know, Rich came to Microsoft Studios with a proposal to make a game that was, you know, similar to, you know, Where's My Water, you know, in the fact that we were looking for very innovative touch-based games, and we kind of took the idea of, you know, drawing gunpowder and exploding and work from there. But what was really nice was, you're gonna charge my credit card? There you are. Yeah, not gonna happen, are ya? But what was really nice is that we could actually prototype out the game design. I mean, you know, drawing is simple, but like seeing how it works and where the other pitfalls are, would have been difficult, and it would have actually like made the development of the game take a lot longer if we hadn't been able to kind of test those things out first. So we started with like a very blank, clean slate, saw what testing should be like, thought about how the gunpowder would work and bounce over, you know, streams, what other kind of items we wanted to put in the game that, you know, happen in later chapters. We don't want to spoil it for you since you are all going to go buy this game immediately after.
There's mine carts.
Yes, mine carts.
I really want to show mine carts. Can I charge your credit card? No?
I don't think I have my credit card in that one. We'll show you guys later. And you know, by using Unity to really quickly prototype this, it allowed us to focus on the core gameplay mechanic before building it out and really kind of making the full game and investing all of the time and energy in it, which, you know, is great. I mean, as a developer and as a publisher, it's something that you really want to know is going to work before you put the money forward and the time and effort forward. So that was a really great option for us. I mentioned before that, you know, we have each made two games and put them on the Windows Store. There are now greater than 30 games available, all based in Unity. That number, I'm sure, will continue to grow, especially based on the announcement this week. And that's really great. I mean, we were very much on the cutting edge of it, but there is a wave that is, you know, here and that people are getting on, which is great. So I'm actually going to hand most of this stuff over to Rich to talk about, since he is the one who actually developed the game using Unity and has a lot more insight into it.
Sure. It's not just me, by the way. There's like a whole bunch of really talented people. If you're out there listening, I'm not totally selling you out.
Sorry, Nick.
like Ethan said, it's a lot like how you build iOS applications. How many people have built iOS stuff on Unity? Not a lot. Okay. Well, so on some platforms when you use Unity, like on Android, and you build it, you just end up with a package that you put on a device. On iOS, it's different in that it builds an Xcode project. And similarly, on Windows 8, and Windows Phone, actually, it creates a Visual Studio project, which you then have to compile. But generally, if you're making a game, you would use the editor as you normally would, just moving stuff around and writing your C# scripts. Do stick to C#. Don't use JavaScript or Boo. I don't even know anyone who uses Boo, but just in case. Like I said, it generates a project.
Sorry, I wrote the slides and I'm making him talk.
And then you can extend your application to take advantage of Windows 8 features that you've been hearing about, and we'll talk a little bit about how you might do this. It's not, it's like on iOS where you can't write everything just in your Visual Studio project built from Unity. You do have to do a little bit outside of that. But one of the nice things about this, and part of the nice things about the whole running through .NET instead of Mono, is that you can debug directly in Visual Studio once you've cooked out the project, which is really, really nice. Which leads us to this slide. So previous to this, we had to use a lot of Mono Develop, which, in my opinion, it's pretty amazing that Mono Develop exists at all. But here you see one of my programmers, David, and he just hates it terribly. So when I told him, hey, you're going to get to use Visual Studio, this is the face he made. He's all excited.
Like, that's not simulated. This is actually the face he made. You know, he got truly excited about it. And as you guys have probably, you know, seen in some of the talks over the last few days, you know, the Visual Studio team has done a lot in terms of developing tools for gaming explicitly, and these tools all will work with Unity.
Yeah.
So you get all of the advantages of, like, you know, the latest developments that the Windows and Visual Studio tool teams are doing, in addition to, you know, every piece of evolution that the Unity people bring to it.
Right. And then to be specific, I'm talking about debugging when you've actually deployed it to the AppX package and then launched in modern UI. Although there is now a commercial plugin called Unity VS, which allows you to even debug the Mono stack in Visual Studio on any Unity platform. So
that makes David really happy.
Yeah, it does. He's very ecstatic. I mostly bought that for him so it would shut up, but it's cool. So I'm going to go through some tips and tricks really briefly to make loading times interesting. Some tricks on how to script builds with MS Build. A quick blurb on Windows 8 delegates, which is how you tell Windows 8 to do the Windows 8 stuff. Yo. And then some things that are not necessarily Windows 8 specific, like component caching, object pooling. You experienced Unity guys will kind of already know that stuff, probably. And then, you know, the other stuff. So making loading times interesting, that's why I kind of wanted to point out that little spinning gunpowdery barrel thing, because it's a little trick we came up with that we hadn't seen before, because especially on the RT tablet at the time, loading took kind of a little while, and as any of you have tried to do interesting loading stuff on Unity, it's not that easy to get to, like, do smooth stuff within the engine. So players don't like loading static screens, and there's two ways to do this. Well, it's actually kind of, yeah, there's two ways. So what we did is, Unity's running in a XAML D3D pane, and then you can kind of dump whatever XAML you want on top of that. So you can kind of use the storyboard and animations features where you can create textures and move them around through these XAML elements, and you can do these. The storyboard contains, like, timelines and stuff. Or you can just dump a WMV file in there and play it. So that little thing you saw is actually just a video. One thing to note is that it does actually cost you something. So it does slow down the loading time within Unity, but we found that just the qualitative difference was worth it because sitting there looking at a stack screen is very sad. And it's the same story with storyboard animations. If you're trying to do smooth animations, it does slow down loading.
This is actually something that has been improved in 8.1 as well. The interaction between DirectX and XAML is minimized. So it's worth taking advantage of these, if only, you know, because players don't like looking at static screens. They want to see something, and you should definitely go ahead and do it. These are the easy ways of doing it.
So, I mean, it says XAML and WMV, but they're really the same thing. The WMV sits in a media element within a XAML page. And both things, you can build it within Visual Studio, and they have a near WYSIWYG editor that allows you to do that. Right, so then you have to do these delegates I'll talk about later to go control these things in the XAML page. Okay, so script builds with MS Build. So if you build the project out by default from Unity, you get this Visual Studio project, and you can build from Visual Studio. But there are very interesting things you can do if you want to use MS Build, where you can conditionally compile and stuff like this. Like, you may want some assets that are only in the debug version, or
to give the example of, you know, what happened with us, you know, Microsoft requires that developers deliver, you know, certain configurations of it, you know, whether it's debug, a profile version, a release version, and we need it both in x86 and ARM so that it can go through our testing facilities. You know, rather than sitting around, you know, clicking the buttons to do it, Rich found out that you can use MS Build in a very powerful way to kind of automate all of this for you.
Yeah. So, like, if you use Visual Studio, you can kind of only build two targets at a time, but I had to build six. So I figured out, I kind of knew from previous experience with Visual Studio that there were these tools, and I didn't know what state they were in these days. When I looked, they're actually very powerful, albeit slightly underdocumented. But those of you familiar with the old Unix days in Make, it's like a more powerful version of Make. So you can actually tell from command line the thing to, like, spit out all the builds you want. If you have a really powerful machine, I was, like, doing six parallel builds at the same time. PowerShell is your friend. It does a lot of stuff. I don't even know how to use it. I'm not an expert at PowerShell. I just learned, like, the minimum amount I need to know to do what I wanted to do. But I was doing stuff like looking at asset files in the Unity project to pull out a version number, which then adjusted the version number before I set off the build thing, stuff like that. But you can do stuff like this. So, you know, what this does is it starts the build with a specified configuration, a specified platform, and that lame-looking little line in the middle was just to delay it a little bit so that, you know, sometimes I found that if you do it all at once on sometimes you would run into a situation where multiple builds were trying to access the same file exclusively at the same time, and it would barf. So, you know, you can just add as many of these as you want. Build to your heart's content and to your computer crashes to its knees.
And go get coffee while it's doing it rather than sitting there clicking.
Or play foosball. Or
play foosball, as the case in that office.
Okay, so really briefly about talking between Unity and Windows runtime. So I wanted to make one caveat here, which is when we were starting, we were in the alpha state of Unity for Windows 8. And this is kind of the only way to do this. And now there's another way to do this where you can pre-compile .NET DLLs, and then you kind of have to make two versions of it, like a mono version and then a Windows 8 version, and then they sit in Unity project, and you can call things in there directly from your Unity C# code, and that's definitely one way to do it. The other way to do it is you set up these delegates, which in your Visual Studio C# project you set to Windows 8 function calls, so that when you call from Unity, they really call the .NET stuff in Windows 8. I don't know if that's a little bit confusing. Sorry, it was like hard to.
We have some talks
through all
these
leaps. So here's like a quick example of what I mean. On the Unity side, you set up these delegates, and they're these static. They don't have to be static, but in this case, there's these static functions, and these are for bringing up a pop-up. And on the Windows 8 side, it's kind of confusing here. But on the Unity 3 side, this is in a class called RRG MetroBridge. RRG being Rogue Rocket Games, woohoo us. And then on the Windows 8 side, this show generic pop-up is actually written in a, it's not really native, in Windows 8, what are those things called? RT component code things. So then you set that to the .NET exported Unity 3D C# side stuff, and then it all just kind of magically works. And if you just wanted to work in your editor too, you just always check for null before you call it, and for the most part, you're fine. You can ask a question about that later. I was I don't know if I explained it that clearly, but. Okay, so this is more about just Unity in general, but it is important on this platform because some of the calls to do some of this stuff dives into the RT side code, and jumping over that bridge too often is kind of slow. So as it says here, the interop between managed and native code is expensive.
And what we should explain, I mean, it helps that all of you guys are, have used Unity before, but you're doing all of your game code in a managed language, and their engine is running, 95% is in C++ native code. So doing a lot of talking between the engine is jumping across this interop barrier. And so you want to code wisely. I mean, this is there's that overhead on any platform, and this is just about coding in a smart way to minimize those calls.
Right. So for example, this is bad. And the reason why this is bad is that transform isn't actually just a member variable. It's a property. I always get these things wrong. Property, which is basically boils down to it's a function call that dives into native code to actually fetch the transform. So then every time you run update, it's going to go jump across to C++.
Twice in this case.
Twice?
Because the translate and the transform have to jump across.
So so you get on the boat, you go across the river. And you're sad.
That's bad, but it's not catastrophic. I mean, doing this once is not a big deal.
Yeah, unless you have a lot of stuff. But this is terrible. So you're doing it a lot of times. And I know that Ethan wrote this because the I is capitalized in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look at that.
But not only are you doing it 1,000 times, but and it says my transform. Good job, Ethan. Transform is called there. If it was written right, transform would have been called twice. You jumped over it twice every time in that loop. So hypothetically, what you're supposed to do is you cache away your component ahead of time, and now you have a pointer to it in your .NET C# code, and now you've reduced this to one jumping over the ocean. This is another more generic trick, but game object pooling. Unity doesn't have a way for you to do this by yourself. I mean, sorry, they don't have a way to do this out of the box. They leave it up to you to decide whether or not you're going to do that. So you can, there are pooling things on the asset store that you can get, which I haven't tried. Or you can write your own, and it can be as complicated or simple as you want it to be. We have a simple one. It's not that interesting. But it basically comes down to the fact that creating and destroying game objects is kind of expensive. It's true even in the non-Windows 8 case, but it's especially true in the Windows 8 case. I kind of cheated on Gunpowder because we have instant reset, so I just never threw anything away, so I didn't have to pool anything. And this last bit is sort of, I think Ethan got this from another talk. But
yeah, this came actually from another Channel 9 talk that the Unity guys did, which I have links for at the end of the presentation that are also excellent resources for finding out more of these kind of tricks.
So here's a really simple example. Instead of destroying stuff, you just grab a game object out of your pool manager. When you're destroying, you set your game object inactive and you throw it into your pool for later use. And instead of instantiating, you actually just grab it from your pool. And in this case, you have a little default setup function and then set it back active again. There's obviously a whole bunch of caveats with this stuff. You got to be careful about how you manage your objects because sometimes things are actually expecting to be destroyed. Like if you do things on destroy or something, it's going to be terrible. Or on awake, those things won't get called again. So you just have to be careful about how you're constructing all your functionality.
So I'll do this one. So, I mean, the last two tips, were kind of more generic Unity optimization tips. And additionally, there are a number of things that Unity allows you to do that can end up being harder for low-end systems to do it. Now, these are really the reason why I wanted to emphasize these is because Windows 8, unlike say iOS or Android, actually the Unity version allows you to use these very CPU-intensive components where they won't on iOS or Android. And the reason why is because Windows 8 covers a huge range of hardware, everything from low-powered Atom devices and ARM devices up to very high-end gaming PCs. So these things are available to you. But you have to think about them holistically in terms of the operating system platform as a whole. You don't want to try and use all of these things and then try and run it on a ARM tablet and find that they don't work well, your performance is poor. So these are things that are available to you, but you really should think carefully about where you're going to put your CPU cycles. Of course, this list and really all of this evolves as both the platform and hardware evolves.
Just to be clear, non-tessellated sprites really comes down to you don't want to do too much alpha overdraw. So it's more about having a giant sprite on your screen, drawing a lot of empty space. That's kind of slow.
And you know, as you guys are probably aware, you know, Unity Terrain gives you a lot of great features, but they are very CPU intensive. Notes for porting. You wanna handle this one?
I can.
Cool.
Give me the thing. Ah, the talking thing. So make sure you think about mouse plus touch, because we actually ran into this because we didn't think about it ahead of time. But there's like input.touch and input.mouse. And then we were talking about these devices which can have a mouse and touch and maybe more other junk. And at the time, touch index 0 was actually the same thing as input.mouse, which has changed now. But we had to jump through some hoops and make sure we knew which things we were doing. And you also kind of want to check Windows. Windows will tell you what's there. So you can actually ask it, like, is there a touch device and is there a mouse device? And you can make decisions on that based on how you want your game to be played. For ours, we always wanted to focus on touch. So we basically said, look, if you have touch, that takes priority. And if there's a mouse, great, they can use that. But if they're touching and mousing at the same time, just, you know, ignore that mouse thing. Who cares? But luckily, there's this new thing, which I told about, which I haven't tried yet. But now there's input simulate mouse with touches, and that's actually the thing, I assume, that turns on the fact that touch zero is the same thing as mouse. So now you can control that, whereas we had to sort of heuristically decide that we understood what was going on, which you can actually confuse gunpowder a little bit, but don't do that.
So this is something that we brought up very briefly at the earlier, earlier slide, talking about what the differences are. So native code plugins need to use runtime APIs. So, you know, the people who are releasing plugins in the Asset Store wrote them using, you know, whatever they wanted to make them work with Unity. Now, there are some APIs, as you guys are well aware, that don't work within the WinRT environment. Thankfully, there are very easy ways to move things over. And in our experience, I don't think you guys had any problems with any plugins.
Not the ones that we chose, although we had to be careful about a couple things. So just to talk about this HashTable and ArrayList thing really quick. I don't know the whole history of HashTable and ArrayList, but these are like C-sharp things in their Unity, but they're actually really kind of bad. And in Windows RT land, they don't even exist. So, well, they kind of do. But if you do use them, you will fail the WAC test and ultimately fail the Windows Store. They just won't let you use it. And there's been a few people who have talked about simple ways to sort of override them in these little stub code things, so you don't have to change HashTable and ArrayList in every example. And I may be able to send you a link to that. There's like another guy did a talk that had a good idea for this.
But what I was gonna say, in Gunpowder and in the other game I worked on, Harvest Experience, every time we came into a plugin that we actually did want to use that, you know, had issues in terms of APIs that were in use that we weren't allowed to use, we just contacted the author, and in most cases they either made the change for us very, very quickly, or they gave us the source code to it, you know, said, please make it work the way you want, and then, you know, we just give them the code back. So the plugins on the Asset Store are actually being upgraded fairly quickly to be compatible with the Windows 8 branch. Like I said, any hurdles you have, people seem to be really open to fixing them, which has been great. As Rich mentioned, the way to tell if one of your plugins has these is to run the Windows App Certification Kit. This is a tool that, you know, comes with the SDK. I think actually the next slide has more of it.
Oh.
So we did want to share some stuff outside of Unity. As game developers, since most of you guys have used Unity, I'm assuming most of you are game developers. So from the game aspect, there are some things that you should really think about and make sure you do to save you pain and troubles that we endured ourselves. One of them is the Windows App Certification Kit. It is really important that you spend time running this often. It helps in many ways. You know, it helps in determining whether you're using, you know, valid APIs to release in the Windows Store, performance characteristics of your game. These are all things that if you don't run it for a while, you might come back and do it, you know, and run it and find that you fail something and have to go back and rip out a whole bunch of code.
Yeah. If you import like the wrong .NET, what are those things called? Assemblies. Just by referencing like one function call somewhere, you'll get like a WAC report that has like 50 things, and it says, you're a terrible person because you've included these things that are not supported in Windows 8. But what will come down to sometimes is you change like one line of code to not use HashTable, for example, and if you got rid of them, all like 50 of those things will go away, and it's because it's pulled in this entire assembly that's full of stuff that doesn't like.
So use it as a warning light. I mean, add it to your regimen of testing for your builds, just to sanity check that you're still doing the right thing. It takes 3 minutes to run. You can script it and make it work in a really useful way. The other one that it's funny because I think Rich still rages every time I mention it. Is current app versus current app simulator. These are the APIs that the Windows Store gives you to check the licensing terms of the product that they've downloaded. There are two versions of them. One of them you use while you're developing your game, and one of them is the one that you use in your retail version. Both of them pass the Windows Application Certification Kit tool, which is frustrating because you might try and go to submit your game to the store and it will get rejected, and they'll just say that it crashes and you'll ask why and they say it just crashes, and you run it on your side and it all works fine and they say it crashes. Well, it turns out, I think within our group at Microsoft Studios, we had, three or four games before I made a very serious email about, messaging that this happens a lot. We had a bunch of games that actually failed the store certification because of this. You can't use the simulator in a game you're going to release, for obvious reasons. The simulator allows you to simulate, various licenses, whether it's trial or paid or time-limited trial and things like that. So what we really recommend doing is every time you use that API, ifdef it right there. Tie it to a configuration. Make sure that you're using the simulator for your debug build or whatnot, and then in the release version you are using the actual API.
And show on-screen warnings.
Yes.
If you're using current apps in there, so you just know that terrible things are afoot. Because it's not optional. Like, you can't actually test your in-app purchases without using current app simulator. It is not like iOS where you have a sandbox environment. You literally have to call a different API to even test it. It's very dangerous, so be
like
careful.
Said, it gets ragey. So just save yourself the headache and do that right from the beginning. And as I mentioned before, the other thing you want to think about kind of in a holistic sense is the fact that you are making games for everything in a range of hardware. I mean, I'm running Gunpowder right now off of a Core i7 machine. But we also, as a Microsoft Studio, we want to support every piece of hardware that works with Windows 8. And it's one of those things where we had to make some design decisions to make it so that it works correctly, yet still looks good and plays the way we want to. So think about that from the beginning. And it really, if you are taking the time to consider these things early on, and budget your CPU usage and things like that, it really will make your life better in the long run. You have the clicker?
Boop.
Thank you. So there's some other stuff that I kind of wanted to share. This is mostly from the publishing side of things, because you guys, if you're self-publishing in the Windows Store, you'll have to deal with this yourself. Game ratings are important for many reasons. Primarily, there are some regions where you cannot ship your application if they don't have rating metadata in them. I believe the Windows Store has in their documentation the regions that they are. I can't remember them off the top of my head. And it's not hard to actually submit this metadata. It's funny because before Tuesday, there was one way to do it, and I actually just found out that with Visual Studio 2013, there's a new way of doing it. I was trying this morning to quickly figure it out so I could give you guys more information about that. But basically, if you import a Visual Studio 2012 project that already has a GDF file in it, it tells you how to do it, and I just haven't had a chance to do it yet. But there is a way to include metadata. It is important to do so you can get sold in all the territories. Additionally, it does allow parents to use the family safety feature, which is nice. You don't have to worry about kids playing things that they shouldn't be playing. Some territories do use a self-rating system. So even if you are a small developer and have never done rating before, the ESRB does allow you to do a self-rating system for free on Windows 8. So go to their website and get a rating. It makes things work better, makes everything more legit, which is awesome.
They do eventually review your stuff, though.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
They made me change my sushi chop rating. Can you believe that?
That's funny.
It's not you for everyone, because there's blood squirting out of the fish.
Out of the fish. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you have the clicker.
Yeah.
So this is something that I wanted to share, again, from a publishing side, that we as a group kind of spend a lot of time trying to think about ways that we could leverage Windows 8's kind of unique features to be better for games and game sales, really. And one thing that we really found that was interesting and really easy to use was the live tile system. This is something that really doesn't exist on other platforms, and is something that you can take advantage of. On iOS, when I'm looking at a competitor's game on there and I see notifications come up from games, there might be a dozen of them, and as soon as I clear one, they're all gone, and I've lost that ability to communicate with the user. With a live tile, you have this billboard on someone's screen that you can communicate with. We've used it, to tell people when there's a title update or when new DLC is available, but you can make it more advanced. You can, if you have a free-to-play PvP game and there's a limited time sale on something, send a tile there. Bring people back into your game. Use this window to their computer that they've given you And use it to you know, your advantage. So there's no reason not to, and since it is really unique to Windows 8, it's worth doing. You know, people, we've shown internally, I don't remember the number off the top of the hand, you know, it increased retention when we told people there was something to come back to. It increased our DLC sales when we said that there was content available. You know, it just helps discovery overall. It really does help, too, if you have a trial and you decide to put your game on sale, message that to the user. Let them know that now is that limited time to go and buy that title. And all of those things, you know, really kind of affects your bottom line in a very easy way to do it. And I know that with the new, with Visual Studio 2013, there's a really easy way to set up an Azure service, which, you know, actually our developers had to do on our end to make it all work well. And so I mentioned that, you know, we wanted to take a minute to kind of think about, you know, where we're going from here. You know, Windows 8.1 fixes kind of, honestly, what I thought was the biggest hurdle, which was store discovery. I'm really happy with the way the store looks now, the fact that it recommends other games. You know, when you're looking at a game, it shows the ratings right there, it shows the top reviews. You know, it's become a much more conducive place to selling game software specifically, let alone all software. So take advantage of that. Get in there now, you know, get some buzz and build about your game, and you know, take advantage of the new features. Additionally, there's new hardware. You know, as we mentioned before, there were some CPU limitations that you had to be aware of. And as new hardware continues to come out, you know, take advantage of them. Think about ways you can use them, whether it's, you know, the next level of DirectX or, you know, some other really cool new stuff that's attached to it, you know, 3D printers. You know, think about ways to use those. You know, I was down on the floor, and I was just loved the 3D printer stuff. And
did, you know, our thing print out?
What?
Did our thing print out?
I don't know. We'll have to go check.
Okay.
We were trying to print something last night, and we have no idea if it actually worked. You know, take advantage of that. You know, Windows is a huge platform with really cool peripherals and everything else. You know, do stuff with it. And Unity, you know, is working hard at making, you know, being the best partner they can and making the you know, Unity system work as well as it can across all Windows systems. I mean, I think, you know, the announcement this week kind of just reinforces that. Keep pushing it. Keep pushing them. I'm sure they appreciate your feedback on it. I know they enjoyed mine, even when it was strongly worded. You know, make the platform and the tools you're using better by using them and discussing with the people who make them, you know, how to make them better for you so you can make better games. Like I said, there are a couple of resources that I wanted to just highlight for you guys. And, you know, this slide deck and I think a video of the talk will be available, you know, at some point after this is over. Unity has a number of guides for optimizing just in general, then graphics, and then, you know, mobile specifically. And I put them up there because, you know, again, you're working on a range of hardware, and these kind of optimizations end up being very important. So read them. Some of the tips that I have in here actually were taken from there. There's some Channel 9 videos as well. I think the next one is here. This actually is the URL to Rich's first talk on Unity on Windows 8. And there are, I think, 5 or 6 other talks from Unity engineers up there as well that are really important to get to. I listed some Windows 8 and Windows runtime stuff as well. I'm sure at this point you've seen these URLs, you know, many times. They're important to have. I actually do bookmark them when I don't bookmark much else. Just so that I know what's wrong, you know, very quickly. And that basically touches on what we're trying to do and build Gunpowder with using Unity. I did want to actually quickly show you guys one more game that I worked on. It's called The Harvest. Just to give you a sense that, you know, you don't have to just, you know, with the CPU constraints and everything else that, you know, I kind of put out there as a warning, these are not limitations. These are just things to be aware of. I worked with a company called Luma Arcade to bring this game called The Harvest, which was originally a Windows Phone game, to Windows 8. And, you know, our goal for this game, you know, where Gunpowder, we were looking to really innovate, make an innovative touch game. With The Harvest, we really wanted to push a narrative, you know, RPG-style game forward. These guys originally made this game for Windows Phone 7, and I approached them saying I wanted to take something, and I wanted to make the best-looking game that was going to be out in the store at any time. So they really delivered. I mean, this is running in Unity, running in Windows 8. They have all of the fancy graphics that you'd want in a game. Here they actually use some of the same techniques to make a nice loading screen as well. And you can see, you know, we didn't really cut any corners here. It's a fully touch-enabled game. I'm going to actually try and play it here. It has some, like, you know, really cool effects. It actually also features synchronous multiplayer, which was really, it was the first game in the Windows Store to feature full-time, you know, real-time synchronous multiplayer. And, you know, the limits are just how much time and effort you want to spend on it. And it's worth actually pushing them. You know, this game, I think Command's, I think we're currently selling it at $6.99 on the Windows Store, which, you know, is a price that's almost unheard of, you know, in a lot of other competitors' mobile stores. And it's selling. And that's, you know, really exciting to see that there's a market for these kind of, you know, these kind of games. And that really covers what we wanted to do. We did want to make sure we had a lot of time to, you know, take questions, since I know some of you guys are really eager to ask them or, you know some other things from our experiences. So if you have any questions, you know, feel free to step up to the mic and let us know. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the two great games, first of all.
Okay.
I want to ask about the XAML and Unity integration.
Okay.
You said that we can connect some of the XAML components on Unity, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think it would be possible to code some of the user interfaces using XAML and use Unity for your game?
While you are technically able to do it, mm-hmm. I wouldn't recommend it necessarily, because it's the same kind of thing where you're going to have like two layer, like you're going to have a XAML layer over the D3D layer, and it's just going to be a little bit slow. You can do it. I mean, I recommend you experiment with it, and you'd have to kind of do it in the same way I showed, where you link up delegates to C# functions that would control your XAML.
So Unity layer is working on a swap chain background, something like that?
So do you know? With the 8.1 stuff, it might be a different way to do it. I honestly don't know. I would check with the Windows tech, and there's actually the Unity guys here. You can check with them. I know that the recommendation that we were giving during 8.0 was to not do that. Build your user interface in Unity, and use the bridge out from Unity to 8, you know, to the operating system to deal with the Windows 8 specific stuff.
The Unity guys do have a small example where they are doing that. They have like sliders and buttons and stuff that are in XAML, and they show you how to communicate back and forth there.
Is it on site?
I don't know where it lives anymore. Do you guys know?
It might be on the beta site still.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, if you join the I mean, I don't know what their plan is in terms of the beta site and stuff like that. Okay. But take a look around there. There's some good examples there from people like Rich who actually, you know, kind of.
Thanks a lot for the great tips.
Of course, sure. Absolutely. Anyone else? Cool. Awesome. Thanks.
Oh, wait.
Hold on. We got one more? Yep. Go ahead. We got you.
Hi. Thanks for the tips about.
Actually, I don't think that one's working. Is it?
IT. Oh, there we go.
There. Oh, thanks. I was just going to say thanks for the tip about the optionally just loading a video for like the loading screens. So I wanted to, the questions are about that. Like, what. Formats did you use for the videos, and what libraries were used to play the video?
So in XAML, there's just an element called media element.
Okay.
You don't need any additional libraries for it. And you should probably just stick with WMV, because it's like Windows and Windows Land. It's just going to work best.
Makes sense. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I think there are a few restrictions in terms of the bit rate, but they're so high that you shouldn't have a problem. We use a WMV video at the beginning of the harvest to do an intro video for the game. And at one point, they were like, you know, really trying to throw a huge bitrate file at it, and it caused some issues. But I think that was like, you know, like 5 meg per second kind of thing. So anything reasonable works, and it works well. And it is, I mean, it's as simple as opening a media element, loading the file, and hitting play. So it works well. Anyone else? Cool. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you coming.